episode 131 of the Highly Relevant Podcast, a Latin X show where I interview the people and discuss the moments that are shaping our American and Latino pop culture. Well, we're into the first week of November already, at least here in New York. I'm not sure where you guys are listening from. Some of you are listening. I saw you guys are listening from Germany on Spotify, the UK. I saw Dubai somewhere as part of the stats in the analytics of the podcast. So I'm glad the show is a bit global for you guys. But here in New York, we're going through the fall season. The leaves are turning different colors. And there's a big chill in the air. And it just feels like winter's approaching. I started actually playing Christmas songs the other day because I went to go see a movie with Henry Golding and Emilia Clarke. Henry Golding's the guy, the lead actor from Crazy Rich Asians, and Emilia Clarke is from Game of Thrones. And they did a movie called Last Christmas based on the song from George Michael's Last Christmas. You know, Last Christmas, that song. As soon as I left the theater, I started listening to Christmas songs on my way back home. I just walked it and I got into the Christmas spirit. I don't know. It's something about New York and the nippy, cool, cold air, you know, just brushing against your face. Something almost romantic about this season heading into the winter. And it was cool. It was cool. Anyway, let me tell you about the show this week. On this episode, I want to introduce you to Marco Juarez. If you have not heard about him, he is the head of Latin music at Pandora. I'm sure many of you have Pandora. I've had Pandora, man, for years. The only thing I've never really liked about Pandora has been, you know, the commercials in between the songs. Just right when you get into a flow, like three commercials pop up and I hate it. And I'm not going to pay a dime for Pandora. It's just not going to happen. Especially when I can't control the music the way I can control it on Spotify. So that's the only problem I have with it. But I had a conversation with Marcos about Pandora, where it is now, how it's competing with the other streaming platforms, how Latin music is a part of the Pandora algorithms and the Pandora brand. What's the Latin music strategy? How did he get the job? We talked about genres. We talked about why Ozuna is the most listened to station at Pandora. We talked about Mexican music and how come it hasn't crossed over. We had a lot of great conversations that I think you guys are going to get a great insight. And Marcos is one of the smartest people I've talked to in this industry. Guy is really eloquent. He knows exactly about music and especially Latin music. He almost talks about it in a very academic way, which to me is always very intellectually stimulating. And I think you guys will enjoy the conversation. But before I talk to Marcos, it's time I give you my weekly pop culture news recap in a segment I like to call Jacked In. Let's begin with the top movie news of the week. Mexican-American director Alfonso Gómez Rejón will direct Newsflash, a biopic about legendary anchorman Walter Cronkite. Rita Moreno is getting a documentary executive produced by Lin-Manuel Miranda. Scream 5 is in early development. Robert Rodriguez has cast Ben Affleck in a new thriller. Eddie Murphy is thinking of quitting acting and doing stand-up full-time. Paranormal Activity is getting another sequel. And defunct actor James Dean has been cast in a new movie 63 years after his death via CGI. In TV news, ABC to renew Revenge as a sequel with a Latinx lead. Zoe Saldana to star in an executive-produced new Netflix TV project with Reese Witherspoon. Apple TV's The Morning Show is returning for season 2. Beverly Hills 90210 revival canceled after one season. And Lin-Manuel Miranda co-stars in a new HBO show called Dark Materials that's out now. Switching over to music, Selena Gomez made history as the first artist to hold a number one spot on both Billboard and Rolling Stone charts at the same time for Lose You to Love Me. Rosalía premieres new music video Apale, and Ozuna premieres a new music video called Hasta Que Salga El Sol. And in tech and social media news, Spotify launches standalone music app for kids. The US government is suspicious of China's TikTok app to be used as data spying. The Google Pixel 4 will be up to $400 off on Black Friday, and Apple commits $2.5 billion to combat housing crisis in California. I am now joined by Marcos Juarez, who is Pandora's head of Latin music. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much. Appreciate that, Jack.
Well, Marcos, tell me a little bit about how you came to be the head of Latin music at Pandora.
Absolutely. So I've been at the helm of Latin Music here at Pandora since 2012. My background is a little bit unorthodox as far as Latin music industry. You know, I had 11 years in music retail here in the San Francisco Bay Area, which for me was an invaluable education.
When you say music retail, you were
record store.
Ah, hey, we all did that job in the 90s, you know?
Yeah, man. Yeah. You know, I mean, it was for me an amazing resource in terms of learning about Latin music, but Latin music was more peripheral, and having a record store job allowed me to really dive into that. So, you know, began collecting Latin music and consuming it pretty voraciously. Wow. Began DJing, doing clubs, ended up getting a degree in Latin American studies from UC Berkeley, worked radio there as well, started studying different folk traditions of Mexican music. So it was really sort of a hybrid approach to this. And then, you know, like all great opportunities, somebody I knew was already working at Pandora, someone that I had connected with while working at record stores, and made me aware that Pandora was looking for someone to lead their Latin programming effort. And so I came in 2012, did that, and have had a lot of great success in building out what it is that Pandora offers and how we represent for Latin music and Latin culture.
So usually when you enter a company for the very first time, you know, not every executive comes in with everything working perfectly. So I'm sure there were some challenges on your end, and I don't want to necessarily assume what they were, but can you take us through the first 6 months of what it was like for you there? Was Spanish language music, was Latin music top of mind for the executives there? Is it something you had to educate them on in terms of what it meant for business, what it meant for culture, what it meant for buzz?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I think, you know, streaming was still nascent at this time. Mm. And so, you know, I mean, I was brought in with the intention of addressing and serving this audience. So I would say there was an awareness that this was a huge opportunity, and that, you know, this was definitely something that needed to be covered well and covered thoroughly. But, you know, I mean, back then, you know, Pandora was very much like a startup in a lot of ways, although it was, you know, publicly traded already at that point, and, you know, the industry leader in terms of digital streaming. You know, you kind of have to start from the beginning. And definitely there are times when you have to advocate on behalf of Latin music and explain the diversity within this genre that we call Latin music, which is obviously a misnomer. We're talking about two continents, almost 1 billion people, infinite diversity. And so, you know, that was a lot of, I think, the initial conversations I have just in explaining my approach and how, in order to do this well, you need to be reflective of the diversity of Latin culture, as well as the diversity of different periods and different styles of music. Mm-hmm. And we need something for the abuelos at Christmas time, and we need something for the kids, you know, today having a house party. So, you know, it was being reflective and representative was really the mantra over and over and over. And, you know, those conversations still happen today, not so much internally, but externally. And I'm sure you run into this too. Yeah. You know, just endlessly having to explain the opportunity with Latin music, the diversity of Latin music, especially when mainstream culture feeds you very specific and rigid definitions of what Latin music is. You know, you often have to take a step back and elucidate people a little bit. Like, you know, there's a legacy here. There's diversity here. There's a great richness that should be considered.
Have you seen an uptick in interest in Latin music for those traditional users?
I mean, absolutely. You know, we've always had a strong Latin audience. You know, I think Pandora is, at least amongst those who listen to Latin music, is considered, you know, one of the foremost sources of Latin music in terms of digital music.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I mean, definitely. You know, there's more interest in general, especially as mainstream, quote-unquote mainstream artists collaborate more freely with Spanish language artists. You know, I mean, I think it's more top of mind. I think Latin culture in general is moving more towards the mainstream. I think Americans are becoming acculturated to Spanish language and to Spanish music. You know, obviously food has been there for a long time. But, you know, Spanish music has been influencing mainstream music for a long time. So I think this is a continuation of that. I think maybe one of the differences, though, is access to technology and the ability to disseminate your own music much more freely, and where there's much more choice and we are less beholden, at least in the case of music, to the traditional gatekeepers of corporate music in terms of labels and that type of structure, wherein you have to fit into a rigid definition of what Latin music is. You're either a regional Mexican artist, or you're a tropical artist, or you're an urban artist. And I think the diversity of Latin voices has allowed for more people to identify with Latin music, because more and more, there's something for everybody.
And speaking about everybody, you recently, I've been reading a lot about El Ditor, and the name caught my attention because I was like, okay, I love the bilingual Spanglish aspects of it. And but it's also just like a cool name. And I kind of wanted to ask you, what is it exactly?
Sure. So we have had some marketing efforts in the last couple of years around specific Latin genre listening experiences, the first of which was El Pulso, which really sought to highlight the phenomenon around Latin urban music and pop music. And it was informed by the large markets in the U.S. and the consumption patterns around, you know, what was this emerging new Latin pop sound that had really taken over in the last 4 or 5 years. Then we did some programming around regional Mexican music, which is, you know, a juggernaut of Latin music consumption, the Latin music industry here in the United States. And that station was called RMX, or RMX, which is shorthand for Remix, Regional Mexican.
Right. Sounds like Remix though, right?
Totally.
Was that the illusion?
I think it was sort of up for interpretation, depending on, you know, what you're coming into it with. So, you know, we covered sort of these bigger genres that are very much mainstream in Latin music, but we also saw the need to highlight all this independent music coming from different regions of the United States, as well as different regions of Latin America that didn't necessarily fall into specific genres. And the concept of El Ditor was to really highlight music that maybe doesn't need a genre. We're really looking at what are movements in specific regions like Los Angeles or Mexico City or Bogota or Miami. You know, what is the music that's emanating from the more DIY sect of musicians and artists? And so the idea with Ditor was to allow for a platform to compile that music, to present that music, and to introduce our audience to artists with you know, whom they may be unfamiliar with.
Who curates it?
It's myself and my colleague Leticia Ramirez.
Okay. And I mean, obviously, by just listening to you talk, you have an incredible understanding of Latin music and its history. But isn't part of the technology, the algorithms, aren't they supposed to be curating now? I mean, it's amazing that real people are curating it, because you get a real human connection from it. But what about algorithm curating?
Yeah, I mean, algorithms still very much dictate listening experiences on Pandora. More specifically, though, when you type in an artist. When you type in somebody like Daddy Yankee, you're going to get a Daddy Yankee listening experience that is tailored to your feedback, to your interaction with the Pandora platform.
Right.
So based on what you've thumbed up and thumbed down, that is the music that you'll be fed, you know, within the context of a Daddy Yankee listening experience. Mm-hmm. With our curated listening experiences, algorithm is part of it, but definitely we are feeding these stations with finite song lists and with very intentional programming and curating, because there's specific cultural nuance that you really can't exploit with an algorithm.
Right.
So it's really the marriage of technology, data, and then also our cultural savvy and our ability to target and present what we believe will be compelling for our audience.
How do you select the music?
It's a pretty exhaustive process that's not, you know, necessarily scientific at all. I mean, we are constantly consuming any information that we can to get a better sense of what's emerging in different markets and different areas.
But do record labels like push songs on you and say, all right, look, here's what we want to promote. You got to do it. If not, if you don't do it, we're not going to give you the music. Or is it more like,
oh, no,
let me listen to the whole album. Oh man, I love this deep cut and track number 11 is awesome. Let me put it on. Is it your personal tastes? Is it the tastes that are dictated by the arbiters of music like record labels and publicists?
Record labels, publicists, managers, artists, you know, we communicate freely with all of them and we are dependent on them to have a better sense of what is the music that's being released, what's being worked on, what are promotional priorities. That said, you know, we are curators and we are programmers and we very much determine what it is that we want to place in specific places. And so, you know, to that end, we're trying to create a cohesive listening experience within each of these different, you know, branded stations. We learned very early on, or I should say I learned very early on, that nobody cares what I like. So,
What do you like, Marcos? What do you like?
I'm into everything. I mean, definitely my core is, you know, I came up collecting old school records. So music from the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, Latin, Caribbean, African. But that said, I listen to all the new reggaeton. I think it's incredible. I love the new corridos movement that's coming out of Mexican music. I love the music that's feeding El Detour. You know,
it's alternative music.
That is a term, you know, that has often been put on anything that doesn't fit in a box. Definitely, you know, people still use Latin alternative as a
how should we describe it?
I don't know, man.
That's pretty big.
I think we're beyond genre, which sucks if you're trying to like talk about music. It becomes very difficult to talk about music in any sort of, you know, broad manner. But I really think, you know, if you ask a lot of these artists themselves, what is your genre? And they struggle with that question. And so to me, it's more about what is this vibe, this feeling, or what is this regional context? Because you find a lot of music coming out of movements and they don't necessarily fall into specific genres, but like,
don't you think that's a failure though of the people who are marketing this stuff? Here, I'll just say the way the brain works is compartmentalizes things that they see. Your brain is so overloaded with information that if you actually label them in a particular way, you can sustain the memory of that music or that artist on a much longer level. There's been a lot of studies of that. Is it time that we come up with labels, or do you think labels are offensive to creativity and artistry?
I think it's essential. I mean, ultimately, we have to talk about music somehow.
Right.
So there will always be genres. And even these artists that I'm talking about, you know, you read their press releases, they give themselves genres. Mm. But what's exciting for us to not deal so closely with genre is it allows us a freedom to be more sound specific. And we can, it's more around like cultural experience, sound, time, movement. And you don't have to fit into this like, on this station, we have indie and electro, and I mean, you can pivot as music changes. And I think that is the fluid way in which people listen and consume music. People, for, you know, a lot of people, I think, especially connoisseurs of music, don't like putting themselves in boxes. You know, you always ask somebody, what are you into? And they say, oh, I'm into everything. And so
which leaves me as confused as the question I asked originally.
Yeah. So I think genre has a place, but there's also places where we can talk about music without genre.
As the decade ends, Latin music's rise in influence in the mainstream has been astonishing. Mainly because to me, most of it is sung in Spanish. And that's what is astonishing to me. Can you explain from your professional view, what were the factors that led to Spanish language urban music to connect with mainstream musicians? For example, Flor de Toloache with John Legend, Piso 21 with Black Eyed Peas, Katy Perry and Daddy Yankee. Where is this coming from?
I'm glad that you kind of called out some different tiers of this. You know, Toloache, I think, is representative of an audience that already was into this. That's like the NPR kind of audience. The audience that was into Buena Vista Social Club, that was into Los Lobos, like, you know, the
culturati, the arbiters of intellect, interest.
Exactly. KCRW,
In LA, right.
You know, so I think you have that, and that has always been here, and that's great. Within the mainstream, though, I think, number one, it's the growth of the Spanish-speaking and Latino population in the United States. As that increases and becomes younger, the influence on popular culture becomes stronger and stronger. And, you know, some of the factors that I mentioned earlier, access to just, you know, the ease with which music is disseminated.
Right.
Exactly. You know, there's, you can have more than one Spanish song out, you know, now at a time. You know, you can have Drake singing with Bad Bunny at the same time that you have Katy Perry and Daddy Yankee. And, you know, and that was not possible, I think, in the 90s. And so I think it's an acculturation. I think also just the global influence of this music is, you know, has an influence on the U.S. It used to be that the U.S. Dictated more global trends. And I think now that there's been some equalization in terms of global music, we're seeing shifts there as well.
You know, you were just talking about regional Mexican music, and I understand everything you're saying, that the reason Spanish language music has integrated itself within the mainstream as of late, I feel like in the last 2 to 3 years, there was a moment when Juanes was performing at the Today Show and no one really went out to see him. Then Romeo Santos went out on the Today Show and it got packed because it's Romeo Santos, but not to the extent of the stadiums he's packing. And he was singing bachata in Spanish. Great. Nothing came from it. But then you started seeing J Balvin and reggaeton come into the scene, and that seemed to have stuck. I remember his first performance on the Today Show was like, whoa, reggaeton just went mainstream. And then Z100 started playing it. So, but why is it that regional Mexican music has not been able to hit mainstream yet? Why isn't Los Tigres del Norte on the Jimmy Fallon show every night?
Well, I think it's sonic, I think, is the issue. And it's, you know, regional Mexican music is uncompromisingly Mexican.
Right.
J Balvin will meet you halfway. You know, sonically, reggaeton is not that far off from hip hop or trap. I mean, you can connect those. But if you're looking at artists that are playing with 12-string guitars, tubas, bajos, quinto, bajo sexto, bandas, that is, for the uninitiated listener, is a stretch. And if you didn't grow up listening to that, it's asking a lot. And I think that's part of it. And it's similar to country music. And I would equate the two, that they're both very regionally focused on a specific vernacular, even though within regional Mexican music, there is a ton of diversity. You know, and I'm not trying to pigeonhole it to say this one thing, but I think sonically, you know, if you don't like accordions, like, what are you going to do with Ramon Ayala or Los Tigres del Norte? So I think it's a sonic thing, you know, and even within the own Latin music industry, regional Mexican music sticks out. It's like the stepchild.
It does.
You watch the Grammys. Yeah. Or you watch the Billboard Awards. It's like a million people collaborating and then they give a second for the banda to come out.
Well,
and
that was the issue with the Latin Grammys on CBS. Remember that in the early 2000s where I think they were going to sue the Latin Grammys or CBS, saying that there was, I believe it was a level of racism or prejudice that was put on regional Mexican music. And, you know, no one's really talked about the narco aspect of that. Do you believe that that's something that people consider when putting these bands on a mainstream platform?
I think the bigger consideration, I mean, because nobody cares about, I mean, if it makes money, no, you know,
right.
People don't care. I just think, you know, it just goes back to the culture and the sound of the music and the stigmas around who listens to regional Mexican music. You know, there's a perception that it skews old and that it's rural. And we're seeing that this is absolutely not the case. There's huge audiences for this in urban markets. And you have first, second generation Mexican Americans making regional Mexican music that speaks more locally. So the narco corridos of, you know, 15 years ago have made way for what they call corridos callejeros, which is like street corridos that focus on urban culture in cities.
Right.
And, you know, we're seeing more and more of, you know, often these singers will sing in Spanish, but their social media presence is all in English. So I think we're going to see this all flip with regional Mexican music. And actually Snoop put out a photo of himself collaborating with Banda MS.
When do you think regional Mexican music is going to go English?
Oh, man. Hopefully never. That sounds terrible.
Okay, well, how's about this? When do you think that country music and regional music will fusion together?
Well, you know, I think that's already happening to an extent. If you look at Texas, You know, there's a lot of country in Spanish. And if you listen to a lot of these Tejano artists, Intocable, Bronco, there are influxes or, you know, influences of country music. It's interesting, you know, we can see who's listening to, like, for example, Ramon Ayala. We can see, if we look at his Pandora radio station, we'll see all the music that people are listening to. And sometimes you see artists like George Strait come up in there. So like Texas country. So there is that, you know, that cross-cultural pollination already happening. To the extent that it gets big and moves beyond just region, remains to be seen.
Which is the Latin station whose genre is the most listened to at Pandora?
I'll put it this way. Our biggest Latin artist station is Ozuna. And that's the biggest one overall. Yeah.
Wow. Why do you think Ozuna, not Daddy Yankee, not Luis Fonsi, not Bad Bunny, I think J Balvin is the number one guy, right? But what is it about Ozuna that people like so much?
I think Ozuna came out at a time when reggaeton needed something different. He has a very distinct voice, and I think the collaborations that he did, the steps that he took, starting in trap, and then balancing that with more melodic reggaeton. I think he's just the perfect pop star, to be quite honest with you, and has had hit after hit after hit. And you know, J Balvin maybe gets a little more attention. Balvin does interviews in English. You know, Balvin was on Spanish. Ozuna's primarily Spanish language. Balvin did interviews in English. I don't know if I said that correctly.
yeah.
Ozuna, not so much. And so, you know, I think that has helped Balvin be more top of mind. But that said, Ozuna, you know, collaborated with DJ Snake and Selena Gomez and Cardi B. So Ozuna's right there. And I think, you know, he is like the Latin pop star that most people would point to.
Oh yeah, the New York Times loves Ozuna. I mean, yeah. Their chief music critic is constantly, you know, I think he's done like a podcast episode just on Ozuna. Right before I let you go, Marcos, I wanted to talk to you about podcasts. Does Pandora have a Latinx podcast strategy?
Absolutely, we are. I think, you know, the strategy has been very, you know, methodical in some ways. And so there's not a ton of content yet, but the idea is to increase that. And part of it, though, is like, you know, I would challenge anyone to name me 10 Spanish language podcasts that really resonate with the U.S. audience. So I think part of it is building that audience. I mean, definitely there's morning shows that syndicate and that become podcasts. But I think
it's not natively a podcast, right?
Yeah. I think there's a lot of work to allow a platform and a voice for Latinos to speak in English or Spanish and to fill, because I do feel there's a void. I mean, you're in this world. I don't know if you would agree with that, but I think, you know, there's a ton of space for Latinos to assert themselves within the podcasting realm. So, you know, we do have some programming, but I think, you know, there's more to do.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, Marcos. Great conversation. And for those who are not Pandora listeners, and they're curious about exploring other musical platforms and they want to try out Pandora, why should they go? In my particular case, the reason I go is because I happen to think that the curation algorithm that you guys have is probably the best. And I think your library is completely different than the ones on Spotify, Tidal, and even iTunes. So,
well, I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, as far as a listening experience, that's tailored with algorithm as well as human curation, I think Pandora is the finest radio product, period. So, you know, in terms of leaning back and listening to music and trying to discover new things, Pandora is without equal, and Pandora has all the same on-demand features that Spotify, Apple, Amazon have as well. So if you want to listen to albums or songs, you know, that is also an option. And, you know, the breadth and depth of catalog on the Latin space is deep, man.
It sounds infinite almost. I've been there, yes. And I've seen some really obscure stuff, man. I'm like, wow, I haven't even heard it. Like, what is this? So great job, man. Marcos, thank you for the chat.
Appreciate it, Jack. Take care, man.
And before I head on out, here are three Latin tracks you might want to add to your playlist this weekend. Eres todo lo que tengo, lo que siempre...
siempre esperaba, te busco en mis sueños.
Mi mitad, San Alejo.
Prometimos discreción con la sensación.
Discreción, Girl Ultra. Ay, hombre, vamos a relajar el pony. Aterciopelados en Jorge Celedón.
Vete a maltratar tus bolas.
And that's it for episode 131 of the Highly Relevant Podcast. I want to thank Marco Suarez for dropping by. And if you'd like to support this podcast, please spread the love on social media and tell all your friends about it. You can reach me on Instagram at Jack Rico and my Facebook page at Jack Rico 40. Remember, it's only through your support that our show can grow. I'm Jack Rico. See you next week on another episode of Highly Relevant.